I'm not sure if you've heard about Dr. Martin Salia. He was the latest victim of the Ebola virus in the United States. He, along with his family, wife and two kids, lived in Maryland. And he was flown back from Sierra Leone, where he worked helping the Ebola patients in a critical condition. And 36 hours after his arrival back into the country, he had died. What was he doing in Sierra Leone? He was a native of Sierra Leone. And as his friend Patricia Mustafa said, he felt like going back to his country, to his own people, helping them. He didn't have to go, but he just felt the need that in this critical moment, he needed to be with his people. He was only 44 years old. And now he leaves behind his wife and two kids. In many ways, this is such a tragedy that we could not save him, because the world needs more people like Dr. Salia. On the other hand, how proud could his family be because he died saving people's lives? Our gospel reading on the Feast of Christ the King celebrates people like him. Jesus said, "Whatever you do for one of the least brothers of mine, you do it for me." This is a great feast that we celebrate today. And I just want to take a few moments to reflect with you on the deeper meaning of this feast, and I want to do that in 3 points. First, I want to talk about the purpose of this feast. Why was this feast established? The Feast of Christ the King was not established as a triumphalistic feast. It wasn't. It's a rather modern feast, and it was only established in 1925. After the First World War, and it was established by Pope Pius XI, and the feast was meant to bring to the consciousness of Europe, who were beginning to be introduced to fascism and were involved in what I call heady hero worship. And Pius XI was trying to accomplish this by not proposing a triumphant Christ or a powerful and victorious Christ. That was not the Christ he proposed, but he was proposing a Christ who can be found in the poor, in the hungry, in the thirsty, in the naked, in those in prison. That is why the gospel reading on any year, in any year for this feast, does not talk about the triumph of Christ. It really talks about the humility of Christ, the self-sacrifice of Christ, the unconditional love of Christ. That's what this feast is meant to promote. But obviously, the feast did not succeed in the intention for which it was founded. Because just about 15 years later, Europe was involved in a much bigger war, the Second World War, and we were directly involved in it as well. And today, whether we are better off than 1945, only history will tell. How many conflicts are still alive in our world today? It seems to me that the original intention of this feast being established is relevant even today. The feast of Christ the King suggests to us that peace will not be accomplished until the relationship between nations and peoples and individuals is based on justice. Peace does not happen like magic. It is hard work. Our relationships must be based on mutual respect and a deep desire for the common good. As long as the primary motive of our relationship, either as nations or as peoples or as individuals, is sheer profit, if it's only self-preservation, if it's domination, our peace will always elude us. And Christ is the one who shows us the way. As Catholics, as Christians, Christ's life is what lead us to peace. So that's the first thing I want to talk about. Second thing I want to talk about, a little bit about power. Especially because today's first reading talks about these shepherds in the time of Ezekiel who were just feeding themselves instead of taking care of the sheep. And if you heard that reading, it's a damning incrimination of the shepherds of the time. And today, because the shepherds are being judged and condemned, it's possible for us to perhaps look at those in authority and those in power and try to judge them as well. But I'm not going to go there today. I think it's good for us to reflect on how we exercise power in our own lives. None of us are without power. The degree may vary. The chief of the armed forces has obviously more authority and power than you and I do. But to a certain degree, we all have power. I as a priest and you as husband, wife, parent or child exercise power. Even a two-year-old through his temper tantrums is exercising power. We all have some kind of power. And no matter what we do for a living, it involves some exercise of power. If nothing else, we have power over our own lives. Nobody here is without power. In our modern times, there is a new dimension that has been added to this exercise of power: social media. People communicate through emails and tweets and Facebook messages in a very impersonal way. And those things that we would not say to a person face to face, we easily put it on social media. Social media is responsible for the destruction of many lives. It has given tremendous power at our fingertips. People break up over social media. And then we have Christ. Even as he lay in a manger, and even as he hung on the cross, he was not powerless. No, he had the power of heaven and earth on his side. He was not powerless. Yet he chose to exercise power in a very specific way. His power was tempered by unconditional love, undying compassion, and unending mercy. And that's the difference between, sometimes the difference between Christ and us. We have power and we can exercise it without compassion, without love, and without mercy. Christ's power is most evident in his selfless service. So if you and I want to know how we exercise power, if you and I want to know, the best thing is to evaluate our lives against Christ. we have to look at is how we conduct our own relationships. To the extent that prejudice, jealousy, anger, manipulation, dishonesty, self-interest, if any of these things are part of any of our relationships, then today Christ is asking us, inviting us to exercise power like He did. May our exercise of power only empower other people and be life-giving. Thirdly, I want to return back to Dr. Martin Salia. As I said, Dr. Salia, as a permanent resident of the United States, was a married man with two children. Dr. Salia did not have to go to Sierra Leone to serve the Ebola victims, but he did. For that matter, Jesus did not have to come down to earth to save us, but he did. And I cannot imagine that Christ did not welcome Dr. Salia into his kingdom. The gospel reading on the feast of Christ the King teaches us that, like Dr. Salia, somehow the poor and the vulnerable must be central to our lives. See, it's very easy for us, and it's very easy for me too, to take money out of my pocket and give it to somebody. But Dr. Salia did more than that. He was with those who needed him. He was giving these poor people who were very ill their dignity. He was giving them respect. He was giving them his presence. When we feed the hungry and clothe the naked, we must do it in a way that Christ would do to them, or if we would recognize Christ in these faces. So genuine ministry to the socially weak and economically weak and vulnerable is about giving people their dignity, treating them with respect, and being with them in times of desperation. In fact, ministry to the poor is not just charity, it's a spirituality. It's part of our prayer, it's part of our worship. We cannot come to worship at a Eucharist and yet be insensitive to the needs of the poor. But sadly, though, even today in our own country, the poor and the vulnerable have become a victim of political and economic ideological struggle. Even as the immigration reform becomes a very contentious issue in our country, Pope Francis, in his address to the World Congress on the Pastoral Care of Migrants, said this. He said, "The Catholic Church is a mother without limits and without borders, welcoming and assisting all of God's children, particularly those fleeing violence, oppression, and poverty." And so the best thing for us to do is not to make the poor and the vulnerable part of the ideological struggle. In heaven, there are no Democrats and Republicans, no Mexican or American, no Indian or European. We'll either be the ones who've taken care of the poor or not. Let us pray that the feast of Christ the King, which was established to make this world a better place, a place that offers, a place in which people offer us themselves in loving service to each other, that we can be that people. May Christ one day say to us, "I was hungry and you gave me food. Thirsty, gave me a drink. A migrant and you welcomed me. in prison and you visited me. I was alone and you took care of me. And one day may we find ourselves in God's kingdom. As we offer our worship, let's bring all the poor people to this altar and offer them to God as part of our worship. People of God said,